on. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup. We had a little technical problem coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C., this 7th of March, with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup. A lot to talk about this evening. We will be talking about two stories that I've covered over the past several years. One, a rather older story from the 1980 presidential election, one that was basically stolen through treasonous activities from President Carter. It wasn't the first time we've seen election theft by Republicans. We certainly saw it happen again in 2000. With what Bush did, and again in 2004 with what Bush and his cronies did. But a lot of this can be traced back certainly to the year 1980 and the Iran hostage crisis. This has never been fully looked into. There's been cover-up after cover-up. We'll talk about what happened back in 1980. Some new information has come my way, and President Carter, of course, is still with us, fortunately, one of our better presidents we've had, I must say, very much given a bad rap back in his term in the late 70s. But we'll talk about that and some other things right after we come back from this break. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup here on Republic, and let's give you the call-in number, the toll-free number, if you'd like to call into the program this evening. It is 800-313-9443. That's 800-313-9443. Two stories I want to talk about this evening. We can talk certainly about other issues. We, of course, see that the government's trying to do a sweetheart deal with Bernie Madoff, allowing his wife, Ruth, to keep the about $70 million in the... It's not an apartment, folks. It is a luxurious penthouse condo on the Upper East Side. He doesn't live in an apartment. I mean, these people don't live in apartments. They want to keep that. They want to put everything in his wife's name, and he's going to cop some plea. It's just another outrage, And we can certainly talk about that. But before we get into other subjects, let me lead in on the subject of what happened to President Carter at an act of treason committed against President Carter in 1980. And let's lead off with this, what happened on Election Day in November of 1980.
Well, back here at our election headquarters, we finally gotten Governor Reagan over that 50% hurdle he's been holding on to for most of the evening in the popular vote across the country. With 68% of the vote counted now, he's gone to 51% of the vote. And Jimmy Carter has dropped to 42% of the vote from the 43 he was holding. 6% of the vote going to John Anderson, as you see. Well, across the United States, though, where we show Jimmy Carter's states that he's won in red, you see there aren't many there, just 6 of them altogether. And for Reagan, well, it's a different story. They're shown in blue, and this country is almost solidly in the Reagan colors tonight. In the electoral vote, there's where the count really shows up. Reagan, 424 electoral votes, and Jimmy Carter, 45 electoral votes. There's a good question to be asked, I think, tonight. It's about time, that time of the evening, when we begin to look into this sort of thing. We maybe don't have answers yet. That'll have to be examined even more closely, but we've got some horseback opinions, I'm sure, as to why the polls over the weekend showed 2 and 3 percentage vote spread, maybe a little more than that in some of the more drastic ones, but nobody predicting an electoral sweep, anything like this, close electoral vote it looked like. I wonder if any of our astute correspondents here have a quick answer to that one. I toss it up for grabs.
I think there were two things about the polls, Walter. In the first place, they were showing Reagan gaining. And in the second place, if his percentage holds at 52% and doesn't go to what is commonly called a landslide of 50%, you don't need to have a huge popular vote. His vote is wide, but not necessarily very deep. He hasn't taken a lot of states by huge margins, at least not so far.
Well, I suppose, Walter, that all of those people had been undecided for so long in the big states all went for a Ronald Reagan tonight. It's kind of difficult across the South to analyze what went wrong in so many different groups because Jimmy Carter did poorly in all groups except for blacks and Hispanics. He had a worse time of it this year with all groups, young, old, various incomes, in town, out of town, than he did in 1976. He just got warm.
Leslie, got an idea?
Yeah, Walter, you have to believe that it was what someone in the White House said, that it was, in fact, the hostages at the last minute. That here there was this break, but he didn't seem to be able to do anything about it at all. He looked impotent once again in the foreign affairs area. You know, this whole thing broke late. There's no question about that, I don't think. And what was the factor? It just stared us right in the face. It was Jimmy Carter flying back to Washington and then having to go out again to campaign. Just totally unable to do anything with this issue, reminding us that it's been there for a year and that he was totally incapable of moving us. I just do feel that in the end, the switch of votes was because of that one issue.
That's obviously a
terrible thing. That's exactly it. Leslie Stahl had it. It was the hostages. It was the hostages in Iran. The Reagan-Bush campaign secretly negotiated with the Ayatollah Khomeini to keep those hostages in Iran until after the election to ensure Jimmy Carter would lose that election. On October the 24th, Bush and Casey had arranged for a secret shipment of weapons to Iran that left from Philadelphia on the SS Poet, a U.S. flag merchant vessel. The weapons, spare parts for their jets, Phantom jets, weapons because their war with Iraq had broken out in September the previous month. That ship set sail October 24th for Iran. It was supposedly going to Port Said, Egypt. The cover story was to deliver corn. It had weapons on board. It never went through the Strait of Gibraltar, never went to Egypt, went around the Cape of Good Hope, delivered the weapons to Bandar Abbas, and then to prevent the 34 U.S. merchant marinemen, all U.S. nationals, from ever talking, the ship was sunk after it delivered the weapons at the port of Bandar Abbas. The ship was sunk. This was a weapon smuggling operation that involved top people in the CIA who were working actively against not only President Carter, but also against CIA Director Stansfield Turner. He had fired a lot of these Bush loyalists after he took over from his predecessor, who just so happened to be George H.W. Bush. This was an act of high treason. There's one person still alive who should be put on trial for murder. Incidentally, the country that was used to destroy the SS Poet and kill those 34 men was Israel. Not the first time they've attacked a U.S.-flagged merchant vessel, but hopefully it will be the last. This is a story I've been working on for a number of years. It's an outrage. George H.W. Bush is still alive, even though the old bag he's married to, she had heart surgery the other day, and I can't believe the woman has a heart after what I witnessed her say in the aftermath of Katrina. But this is an evil family. George H.W. Bush should be put on trial for the treason of 1980. We all know what it says in our criminal statutes about high treason, what the penalty is. This is an outrage. It should be investigated. This entire weapons deal was handled by the same group that apparently may have been behind the assassination of President Sadat a year later. A lot of people didn't want that Carter Peace Agreement, the 78 Camp David Accords. There was a lot of treasonous activities that took place. Some of the principal players in those treasonous activities would come back again during the Reagan administration, and we'd heard their names mentioned in the Iran-Contra scandal. The first Iran scandal was in 1980 when the Bush-Casey team arranged with a low-level CIA analyst who had been assigned to the National Security Council, who, among other things, stole President Carter's debate briefing book. There was only one debate, October 28th, between Carter and Reagan. Stole the briefing book, had classified information in about the hostage negotiations. That briefing book was delivered to Bill Casey, who would become the CIA director under Reagan. The person who stole that briefing book from the White House, from the Carter White House, was Robert Gates. Yes, the Robert Gates who would become later Bush's CIA director, and now is Obama has kept him on as a Secretary of Defense. It is time for Mr. Gates to resign. He should also be prosecuted for his role in this treason of 1980. This is where it all began. Some would say it began on November 22nd, 1963. It probably did. But there are principal players still alive who were responsible for this treason in 1980. They should be brought to justice. This was something, and how dare President Obama keep Gates as Secretary of Defense when President Carter knows fully well that it was Gates who was behind this treason against the president, his president, President Carter. That is a terrible, terrible disservice to President Carter for President Obama to keep this man as his Secretary of Defense. We can understand why Bush had him in there, even though apparently Gates was unpopular with Cheney. That gives you some idea how bad Cheney is. If Cheney doesn't like Gates, you know, it's like the constantly moving goalposts. You know, who's worse, Gates or Cheney? They're all bad. I guess in this case you would say Cheney's even worse, if that is even possible. When you're talking about a guy who committed high treason in 1980. The SS poet, the story has never been told. We need to really investigate this matter about the SS poet. It was an amazing story. And not a whole lot has been really said about the poet. We need to find out more about the SS poet. We'll also talk about another case, more recent case that had to do with the lying about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We all remember what happened there. It was an unbelievable situation. Before we go on, one other thing. President Carter tried very hard to. Before that, we will take a break and be right back after this short break. This is Wayne Massey.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Wayne Manson with the Wayne Manson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, and we're coming to you live tonight from Washington. The toll-free number, again, if you'd like to call the show, is 800-313-9443. Of course, the Iran hostage scandal is what really caused the defeat of President Carter. You heard from the Cronkite reporting of the election, that all the polls indicated that it was a close election in 1980, but it was the Iran hostage situation that really tossed it against against Carter. Carter wanted to have a release. They talked about an October surprise. The Reagan people ensured there would be no release in October of 1980. They sent the weapons to Iran. They would continue sending weapons to Iran. There was a failed attempt to rescue the hostages. This made President Carter look very, very bad earlier in 1980, in April. Let's listen to this clip of President Carter explaining just what happened in the failed attempt to rescue those hostages. Well, maybe we don't have that clip.
Late yesterday, I canceled a carefully planned operation which was underway in Iran to position our rescue team for a later withdrawal of American hostages who've been held captive there since November 4th. Equipment failure in the rescue helicopters made it necessary to end the mission. As our team was withdrawing, after my order to do so, two of our American aircraft collided on the ground following a refueling operation in a remote desert location in Iran. Other information about this rescue mission will be made available to the American people when it is appropriate to do so. There was no fighting, there was no combat, but to my deep regret, eight of the crewmen of the two aircraft which collided were killed, and several other Americans were hurt in the accident. Our people were immediately airlifted from Iran.
Okay, well, that's President Carter speaking of the failed rescue mission. One thing that a lot of people don't know, this was written about by Joe Trento in his 2005 book called Prelude to Terror. In 1964, the CIA interceded with Iran to have released an individual the Iranian secret police arrested, one Ayatollah Khomeini. This was the man who took over after the Shah. He was sent to a CIA safe house, basically, in the Iraqi city of Najaf. And he was guarded by the CIA. When Saddam Hussein figured he had overstayed his welcome because Saddam was secular and Khomeini was very, very religious, he was allowed to leave and go to Paris. He was in... basically connection, he was had a connection with the CIA when he went back to Iran. Many of his top aides were CIA. His foreign minister, a guy named Ghozbizadeh, was CIA. Somebody in our CIA, we already talked about the treason by Gates and by other top people in the Carter administration who were secretly working with Bush and Casey. It looks like this whole hostage situation may have been a setup from the very beginning to embarrass Jimmy Carter, who had no time for the Shah, and then they ensured, well, if you didn't like the Shah, you're not going to like this guy that's taken over. We run him too. We ran the Shah. We ran Khomeini. Then we had the hostage situation. It looks to me, based on what is in Trento's book and other information I've gathered from the archives, that the Republicans were up to their necks in treason back in 1980. The entire Iran hostage episode was nothing more than a way to get President Carter out of office. As I said, Bush, old man Bush, is still around. We also have Mr. Gates still around. These people are still liable to be prosecuted for treason and murder of 34 U.S. merchant marinemen. Let's go to Leo's been holding on in Massachusetts. Leo, are you with us?
Hi, thanks for taking the call. The problem is, you know, it's wonderful that you're explaining all this, what I consider recent history.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure only 10% of the public is even aware of this at this point. But, this is a long skein of things that's been happening. And I think it's really been happening in full force right at 1913 when we had the Fed. Now, think about it. If you're building something and creating a situation and you need all the pieces in place before you start the operation, it seems to me like creating the Federal Reserve was the last piece in place before what happened in 1914. Does that make any sense to you?
Well, it's certainly, you know, this whole idea of a central bank was something that plagued even the founders of our country. There were many people who were opposed to such a notion.
Andrew Jackson bloody teeth and nail. I mean, tooth and nail.
Right.
But so
right.
Anyway, so that's 1913. Now, in World War II, we had this Bernard Baruch and Colonel Hull.
Leo, we got a break here. We'll come right back with your thoughts right after this short break. Hold on.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hey, welcome back. This is Wayne Matson with the Wayne Matson Report, the Saturday Night Roundup, coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. And we have been talking to Leo on the phone. Leo, are you still with us?
Yeah.
Well, go ahead and complete your thought there before we took the break.
Okay, yeah. Well, basically, we're at World War One and World War Two and the Korean War and then the hostage crisis, the Vietnam War, and all that other stuff. Now, I think what we have to understand is that these things are created by a group of people, and they don't care who they support as long as it creates death and destruction, because that's where their money is to be made. Now, I think
right.
The problem is that we don't really have a good... I mean, I consider most of these people, the most treacherous things going. They don't care whether they support a Republican or a Democrat as long as they get their way.
Exactly.
And I have a new word for the lexicon. How about this? Now, since treachery is a description of what certain people do, could we start calling these people treachers?
Yeah, well, I think that's appropriate. As a matter of fact, there's an excellent movie out right now. If you have not seen it, I really highly recommend it. I'm not one to recommend a lot of crap coming out of Hollywood, but it was a movie called The International, it looks like it's kind of loosely based on old BCCI, which they used to call the Banks of Crooks and Criminals International.
Right.
But it really, I think it what you're saying, that film hits it on the head that there are people, they don't make money off wars, they make money off the debt that wars create. It's quite an interesting take on the whole what you're talking about, that these wars and conflicts are created for profit motivations more than anything else. But Leo, we've got a couple other people.
One more little item.
Yes, go ahead. Quickly. Great.
I think to educate the public, we need to create a historical war game of World War One and World War Two and the Korean War with the aspects of the treachery involved and why you were sold out in different ways. Like we had broken the code, but we had to not break
right.
the code on certain things and
right.
let people die in Africa because they wanted Germany to have a few victories so that they wouldn't think the code was broken. I mean,
right.
I think this is the type of thing that we have to have as a war game. You can pick to be a German soldier, an American soldier, but it would all maintain historically correct with whatever happened and whatever the intelligence happened. Is there a war gamer who would like to build a game like that?
Well, maybe there's one listening in. Any software folks, they can post, if they have any ideas, post something to my website in the chat section. But anyway, Leo, thanks for calling in from Massachusetts. And Dave's been holding on in California. Dave, are you with us?
Hi, Wayne.
Hi.
Sounds like Leo wants to talk about anything but George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yeah, well, that's okay. We're
one of my favorite
kind of open chat line here.
Cool.
Saturday night. Go ahead.
I got a couple. I need a couple clarifications, and then I got a comment. George Herbert Walker Bush was CIA director under Jimmy Carter, correct?
No, he was CIA director under Gerald Ford.
Okay.
He replaced Bill Colby. He thought that Carter would keep him on as CIA director. He was sorely mistaken. Carter wanted to clean house. He put his old academy buddy, Admiral Stansfield Turner, in as
okay.
CIA director. He started to face all kinds of opposition. He cleaned house. He got rid of people like Ted Shackley and Thomas Kleins. These were some of the people who then became involved in the secret shipment of the weapons to Iran on behalf of the Reagan-Casey-Bush team.
Yeah, they were also neck deep in the heroin trade.
Absolutely.
Yeah, with George Herbert Walker Bush himself. Well, that shoots my theory down just a little bit, but I got one more question for you. On the SS Poet, I'd never heard of this before. You said that you think the Israelis sunk it with men on board, correct?
It may have been a commando team that was dispatched from a base in the Persian Gulf after it offloaded the weapons in Bandar Abbas. The only question is, was it sunk in the Gulf? Because, you know, in the fog of war, we had Iran and Iraq going after each other's ships at that point in time. The war broke out on September 22nd, 1980. It would have been easy to sink the ship and then say it was, you know, that, well, there's a wreck out there. But what happened with the Poet is the Coast Guard said it disappeared in the Atlantic without a trace, without a mayday, without an SOS, without any wreckage ever being found. Of course, that was the cover-up. It had never transited the Strait of Gibraltar. This ship basically, for all intents and purposes, disappeared not only from the planet, but it disappeared from the news media.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Let me throw my little theory at you. It's a little weaker now, knowing that George Herbert himself wasn't involved directly with the CIA at the time. But I always suspected that somebody nefarious in the CIA, and I always suspected George himself, being involved in the messing up of the rescue that they tried to do of the hostages that happened just before the election. Remember?
I believe that was true. Yes, the rescue was in April. Bush and Casey had already made contact with the Iranians that same month in April. That's when the first meetings took place. There were meetings held in Madrid and in Paris between the Bush and Reagan campaign, primarily Casey and these people. People in the CIA, people who were in the CIA, people who had been thrown out of the CIA, fired by Vice Director Turner, because Carter wanted to get rid of all these old Bush loyalists. He even said so. Carter said later in an interview to the Village Voice that he didn't really know much about what was going on between the two camp, you know, I mean, the Bush Casey team and the Iranians. He heard rumors about it at the time, but he didn't think anyone would be that treacherous. Can you imagine poor Jimmy Carter? The one thing I will fault him on, he had no idea how bad these people were.
Yeah. Well, I always thought it was really suspicious that somehow we couldn't land a few helicopters and planes in the desert, and that some storm came up and they crashed the planes into each other. That just seemed ridiculous to me, and that was never really followed up. And the other thing, just briefly, is there was the weird rabbit attack. Remember that one? I always thought that was some kind of weird inside job thing.
Well, who knows? I mean, these guys, you know, the treachery knows no bounds with these people we're dealing with. And everything I think that happened afterwards could have almost been predicted. The Iran-Contra scandal, of course, had its roots in the 1980 treason that the Republican campaign had with the Iranians. But anyway, Dave, we've got some other callers holding on. Thanks for calling in from California. Paul's been holding on from Montreal. Paul, are you with us?
Yes, Mr. Maslin. Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Hi there. Very interesting program. Listen, you have me flabbergasted with your SS Poet story today.
Yes.
I was doing a bit of a searching while I was waiting. There's hardly anything on the internet about this whole story beside your own post.
Right.
They have it as a Bermuda Triangle disappearance story.
Isn't that convenient?
Imagine.
Right.
I mean, how did you come up with this whole thing?
Well, people who have been tracking this story for a number of years came to me several years ago. Actually, somebody who had a friend whose father went down on the, who's, you know, one of those killed on the Poet contacted me and said, you really ought to look into this. The ship was, but most of the crew lived in and around the Philadelphia, South Jersey area. And that's where I'm from originally. And I swear I never heard of this ship before it was brought to my attention.
I really don't want to say. Sorry, Mr. Madsen. Actually, the reason for my call is it's the second story that I hear today that I'm really surprised to hear about. The other one is the Lahore terrorist attack of last week. Have you heard anything about that?
Yes, this was the attack on the Sri Lankan cricket team.
That's
is that
it.
The one? Yes. Yes.
I've only heard about it today. I mean, like, I'm not hooked on the news all the time. But the point is, that's a major, major event. Do you know if it's been talked about much in the States? I mean, it's
well, not on BBC
and in England.
Yes. Yes, not really. Of course, it's being, you know, they're talking about, have the Tamils who are fighting the Sri Lankans made some common cause with, here we go, you know, Al-Qaeda. I think we don't really know fully well what happened. Attacks on Sri Lankan targets are quite common with the Tamils. It may be the case that they were responsible for this, but I don't believe this.
You don't believe it, and neither do I. But the point is, they're really pointing to a false flag attack. You know, they're really there's a lot of talk over the internet about that. Even some major politician in Pakistan, a Khan guy that was interviewed, and he says it's the first time that the terrorists have been able to escape, and that's a major clue as for being a conspiracy, some sort of a false flag attack, and I really believe that's what it is.
I wouldn't be surprised. There's been a number of these false flag attacks, and
you know, David Miliband was interviewed on BBC, and he said that Pakistan is on a mortal path, You know, so they're really having like some sort of a game going on with Pakistan at this time, and he sent over Richard Holbrook over to Pakistan to investigate or what have you, you know, like his diplomatic delay. Now, what does David Miliband and Richard Holbrooke tells you?
Well, it tells me to be wary of those who are affiliated with the CFR.
With your story, you know, that means that Israel does United States bidding.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Anyway, Paul, I want to get this other clip in. Listen to this other story I'm about to tell you. It's another story that got very little play, but thanks for calling in from Montreal. I want to also, before we leave tonight, talk about, and I know his parents are listening to the program tonight, Ken Ford was an NSA analyst who worked in the Iraqi Signals Intelligence shop, the Signals Intelligence Division of NSA, on the Iraqi weapons of mass destruction. He concluded, based on intercepts of Saddam's government communications, there were no WMDs. This is back in at the time when Bush was looking for any reason, and Cheney, especially Dick Cheney, cooking the books on intelligence. Let's listen to what Colin Powell had to say. I'm sorry, this is George W. Bush had to say about WMDs, if we can listen to this short clip.
Suiciders to kill innocent life, who had relations with Zarqawi. Imagine what the world would be like with him in power. The idea is to try to help change the Middle East. Now, look, part of the reason we went into Iraq was the main reason we went into Iraq at the time was we thought he had weapons of mass destruction. It turns out he didn't, but he had the capacity to make weapons of mass destruction. But I also talked about the human suffering in Iraq. And I also talked the need to advance a freedom agenda. And so my answer to your question is that imagine a world in which Saddam Hussein was there, stirring up
even
more trouble in a part.
There you have it. Bush admitting there were no WMDs. We did not go into war because he had a capacity. We said, Colin Powell said at the UN, he had weapons. They did not have weapons. That's exactly what Ken Ford concluded at the NSA. He was set up later. They accused him of possessing classified material at his home. There was a trial. He's serving 7 years in a prison in Pennsylvania. I'm sure he'd like to hear from you. Ken Ford is a political prisoner. And I'm going to give you his address because this young man was railroaded by the Bush administration, particularly Cheney, with a whole bunch of corrupt prosecutors, a corrupt judge, a tainted jury, suborned perjury, false evidence, false affidavits, you name it. But his name is Kenneth W. Ford, F-O-R-D, and the number is 38154-037, Unit 2, P.O. Box 2000, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, 17837-2000. That's Ken W. Ford, 38154-037, Unit 2, P.O. Box 2000, Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, 17837-2000. It's sad that President Obama is not looking closer at this case. I would hope that the Attorney General, Eric Holder, would look at this case. But it wasn't just people like Valerie Plame Wilson, who was outed by the Bush-Cheney administration, put at great risk. We've had a lot of folks in our intelligence agency who knew the truth, trying to document the truth, and paid the ultimate price by being set up in the case of Ken Ford losing 7 valuable years of his life in prison. Hopefully this this travesty of justice will be turned around and justice will be done. But anyway, that is just one example. I know of so many others of people in the intelligence community who were harassed, who were fired, but this is the most egregious case by far. Somebody who told the truth and had to ultimately face dirty judges, dirty prosecutors, and there's many of them. And Mr. Obama, President Obama, please fire the Bush U.S. attorneys and assistant U.S. attorneys. Fire these people. You're keeping them on. Get rid of Gates. Get rid of these people. Stop reaching out. We elected you for change. We wanted to get rid of the Republicans. Let's get rid of all the Republicans. Thank you very much. Bob has been holding on in Texas. Bob, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm with you, Wayne.
How are you?
I'm fine. You have a lot of intelligence background in your history, and I don't know how George Herbert Walker Bush avoids some prosecution or at least an indictment. Going back all the way to the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, yes, yes, indeedy. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Yes.
I think about, there's no statute of limitations on murder. And then you look at OKC, you look at the people involved in the Watergate break-in, and you look at, well, the reason I called was to ask you, when old man Bush went into the CIA and told everybody he had nothing to do with it before that, he created a separate division within the CIA that was like Team B.
Yes.
And I keep wondering to myself, did this Team B have the ability to go out and hire outside contractors like the Cubans or like the Arabs that they could use as
yes. There was a private, some kind of, there was a private, there was a private CIA. This was the private group that arranged for the weapons shipments to Iran in 1980, and they offshore companies, numbered bank accounts, this type of thing. This exactly what is what you're talking about. This included people like Edwin Wilson, who was selling weapons to Libya, Iran, and other countries. But this is the secret part of the CIA. And anyway, thanks for calling, Bob. Well, we're up on a break here. This is Wayne Mattson. We will be right back with you right after this short break. Okay, welcome back. This is Wayne Mattson with the Wayne Mattson Report, the Saturday Roundup, and we're coming to you live tonight from Washington, D.C. And I was mentioning this book that I've been reading by Joe Trento. It's amazing it didn't get more play when it came out in 2005. There's a lot of very interesting information. It ties a lot of this together. But one thing I did want to mention, and first I will say, we are now being told that unemployment is at 8.1%. Something I heard from a friend of mine who worked at the Bureau of Labor Statistics a few years ago. Bush was already president. He's one of the people who came up with the monthly unemployment statistics. That information was really closely held, just like the formula for Coca-Cola, Colonel Sanders' fried chicken recipe. You would never want that released before the official date because people could play the market accordingly and make money based on the unemployment statistics. And what he told me was really, really amazing. He said that one of the first things that happened, and he'd worked at the BLS for a number of years, is that they started leaking the unemployment stats before the official announcement. He finally had it. He retired. Had enough time to retire, but one of the things he told me was, listen, he said they're also cooking the unemployment statistics. You realize anyone who's off of unemployment insurance isn't counted anymore. He led me to believe that when unemployment was around 4%, as it was back then, it was really double, 8%. Now that it's 8.1%, figure it's really about 16, maybe 17%. They're lying about that. We're much worse off. No recession. This is a depression. They're lying about it. They want you to believe it. I'm not believing it. But one other thing I want to mention here quickly in Trento's book, and this doesn't have anything to do with the October surprise, but talk about funny coincidences. In 1965, Hurricane Betsy came into the Gulf of Mexico, and a portable oil rig called the Maverick was said to have disappeared without a trace. So in September of that year, George H.W. Bush's Zapata Offshore Company claimed the rig was destroyed by Betsy. The last man evacuated from the rig, a guy named Buddy Bounds, you got to love a name like that, Buddy Bounds, said the rig was perfectly stable during the hurricane. He said he was surprised to learn that the huge rig had disappeared without a trace. He was the last man evacuated from the rig. Zapata, George H.W. Bush's company, received an $11 million settlement for the loss of the rig. Lloyd's of London was the insurance company, but the reinsurer was a company called CV Star, S-T-A-R-R and company, headed up by one Cornelius Vander Star, uncle of Bill Clinton's prosecutor, Kenneth Star, and the man who started an insurance company in 1909 in Shanghai, China, called the American International Group, or AIG. So as the late Paul Harvey used to say, now you know the rest of the story. AIG, of course, is saying that they need more money for a bailout. AIG is another intelligence agency front. It has been for a number of years. And therein, we close this week's program. Wayne Mattson, Saturday Roundup from Washington, D.C., and we will leave you with the theme song from The Virginian, and we hope you can join us this time next week. Thanks for joining us this evening on Republic.